ourselves seated together in conference, and I appreciate your good attention and help. And we are continuing on tonight in our study on the church covenant. And we have been looking at the doctrines, and we've missed a couple of weeks. And Brother Tim Kirby told me he hated to miss any of them, and I don't think he did. Because I was sick 1 week, and then we missed because of the weather 1 week, and I don't think, Brother, that you missed any. So we've been studying this, and we've been in our church constitution, which I handed out several weeks ago, looking at the doctrines. And we're going to finish that up tonight, finish the doctrines, and then we've incorporated that into our study on the church covenant. And so tonight we're going to look at, finish up the doctrines. And the second paragraph said, in the church covenant, which I'm referring to, if you don't have a copy of it, we've got some up here on the front pew, and also it hangs up here in the over to my left, to your right. But that's what we're studying is the church covenant. And it says in the second paragraph, our responsibility as members of the church is to, and I'm picking up right in the middle of it, to sustain its worship, ordinances, discipline, and doctrines. And so that's what we've been looking at, is the doctrines of the church, the ones that we find in our church constitution. Then it goes on down and it says, to contribute cheerfully and regularly to the support of the ministry, the expenses of the church, the relief of the poor, and the spread of the gospel through all nations. And the last part of that, we've took a part of every one of those here tonight. And we'll talk about that just a little bit. And so we're going to finish up not only the doctrines, but we're going to finish up the second paragraph. So that's what we're going to try to do tonight. And in your church constitution, if you've got one, and you look at the doctrines, we are down to the letter S. And so we're going to the very end, and it's S, T, and U. Missions, lawsuits between believers, and giving. And so that's what we're going to look at tonight. But I'm going to take the lawsuits between believers first, and then we'll talk about giving, and then we'll talk about missions. That's the way it sort of ends up in the church covenant over here. So the first thing we're going to look at is under the letter T. And the letter T, it talks about lawsuits between believers. And so that's what we're going to begin with tonight and see what the Bible has to say and what we believe about that. What do we believe about lawsuits between believers? Now, we live in a society that people all the time suing one another. And that's what we're talking about, lawsuits between believers, suing one another. It's the word for it is a litigious society. And that word, it just means this: inclined to judicial contest, given to practice of contending in law. Webster's dictionary says that it's applied to persons, and a litigious man is a bad neighbor and a bad citizen. So what that's saying in the old dictionary is somebody that will sue you at the drop of a hat, that's a bad neighbor and that's a bad citizen. And so this is what we're looking at. And this problem evidently has been around for thousands of years. Because we're going to see here in 1 Corinthians chapter number 6 tonight that the church at Corinth, they had a lot of problems if you study the whole book. But one of the problems that they had in the church at Corinth was taking one another to court. They were suing one another. Now, I've pastored over 20 years, 20 maybe coming up on 24, 25 years, more than that, been in the ministry. And I've, down through those years, encountered a whole lot of problems. But thankfully, and I hope by saying it, I don't ruin it, but I've never had to deal with this problem in the church. But Paul in the church at Corinth, they were suing one another. They were taking each other to court before the unbelievers. And I could see how that would be a problem in the church. Can you imagine coming into church and sitting down on Sunday morning
and across the aisle, you're supposed to meet somebody over there Monday morning in court because they're taking you to court over something. Well, that's what they were dealing with in the church at Corinth, things like that. And we'll read down through these first eight verses in 1 Corinthians chapter number 6. And if you carefully read this, you can understand that that is what was going on. And so, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse number 1, and I'll just make some comments as we go down through here. But he said, "Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unjust and not before the saints? Do ye not know that the saints shall judge the world? And if the world shall be judged by you, are ye unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Know ye not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life? If then ye have judgments of things pertaining to this life, set them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. I speak to your shame. Is it so that there's not a wise man among you? No, not one that shall be able to judge between his brethren, but brother goeth to law with brother, and that before the unbelievers. Now therefore, there is utterly a fault among you, because ye go to law one with another. Why do ye not rather take wrong? Why do ye not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? Nay, ye do wrong and defraud, and that your brethren." And so these eight verses we'll go through and just quickly point out what Paul's talking about. But you can understand there from what we just read that they were taking each other before the law. They were going to court. They were taking each other to court before the unbelievers. Now, in verse number 1, he introduces to them another option. They had been taking each other to court. They'd had problems among themselves. And you'll notice there it doesn't say what they are. And the reason it doesn't say what they are is because in the big picture, it doesn't matter what they were doing. What the problem is that they were taking each other to court. And so Paul introduces another option. And so the other option in verse number 1, "Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unjust and not before the saints." So Paul introduces to them, there's another option other than taking somebody to court, suing somebody, suing a brother in Christ. It's to take that matter before the saints. And so what is he saying here? He's saying, if you have a problem in the church, and there are going to be problems. We have people, we're going to have problems. Paul is saying, instead of going to court, you need to take this matter before the saints. You need to take matters before the church, first of all. He says in verse number 2 and verse number 3, "Do ye not know that the saints shall judge the world?" What he's talking about here is that in the future, God's children are going to have a much greater responsibility. We will judge in the world. The Bible said the saints shall judge the world. He's referring to during the millennial reign of Christ. And we're not going to go over there and get into all of that, but that's what he's referring to. He said, "And if the world shall be judged by you, are ye unworthy to judge the smallest matters?" He's saying, one of these days you're going to judge the world. Can't you take care of something small down here? Verse number 3, "Know ye not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life?" And so the saints are going to judge the world. Don't you think we could judge I'm trying to think of some real popular reasons why somebody would go to court. Don't you think we could judge in a property line dispute? That's probably one of the top reasons why somebody would drag somebody into court. This is my side, that's your side. Don't you think the saints ought to be able to judge between something like that? That's what Paul is telling the church. Don't you think we could settle disputes down here? He gives an example in verse number 4. He said, if then ye have judgments of things pertaining to this life, set them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. And so what he's saying there, what he's recommending there in verse number 4, and maybe all of us have run into this, has anybody ever had to serve jury duty? You know, several people shake their heads. You've had to serve jury duty. If you can serve jury duty, don't you think, if you could serve in things pertaining to this life, don't you think we could apply that in the church? If we can help settle things out here in the world, don't you think we could settle some things in the church? That's what Paul is referring to. Things pertaining to this life. Then he says in verse number 5, verse number 4, he said, set them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. Anybody of right, sound mind in the church could judge, could decide, set them in the church who are least esteemed. Doesn't have to be the pastor and the deacons, but anybody can help to settle something going on in the church. Set them to judge in a matter. Verse number 5, he said this, I speak to your shame. Is it so that there's not a wise man among you? No, not one that shall be able to judge between his brethren. What is he doing in verse number 5? He's rebuking them. He's saying, don't you have somebody in the church that has some wisdom that could help decide and settle some of these problems? So that's a rebuke to them. He said, I speak to your shame in verse number 5. Verse number 6, but brother goeth the law with brother, and that before the unbelievers. Now, what is he trying to get across to them at Corinth? I believe he's letting them know in verse number 6, this is a bad testimony. That brother is taking brother to law, and that before the unbelievers. What would the unbelievers look? They'd look at something like that and say, well, I thought they were supposed to be Christians. I thought they was brothers. I thought they went to church together. And here they are in court, right along with everybody else. And what do you usually associate with court? A lot of times is not good things. And so it's a bad testimony. That's what Paul was trying to get across to them. This is a bad testimony you've got in the church at Corinth. You're hauling each other in the court. And so in verse number 7 and 8, he gives another possibility. Now therefore, there's utterly a fault among you because you go to law one with another. Why do ye not rather take wrong? Why do ye not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? And so he raises the possibility there of, you know, there's some things in this life that you just got to let go. Wouldn't it be better just to let something go than it would to ruin your testimony with the world out here? And so he's setting that is always a possibility. You know, it takes two to rumble and it takes two to sue, I guess. You might not have a choice in it, but that's what he's saying. Why do you not rather take wrong? Why do you not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? And we had a situation this past week, and somebody had contacted Kim, and somebody we used to go to church with years ago, and they had had a problem in their family. And a lot of times when the parents pass away, there's problems about who gets what. And that's what it boiled down to. And so we had somebody contact us, and they said, please help me pray about this. I want to do the right thing. And they went down through all the wrongs, and most definitely they had been done wrong. But it boiled down to this. The person said, this is my family and they're lost. I've been trying to witness to them for years. And what am I supposed to do? And Kim and I talked about it, and we got back to them and said, you know, you have a right. You have a right to go back and say, this ought to be mine, this ought to be mine, this ought to be mine. I said, but if you do that, who you've been trying to witness to and win to the Lord may never come to know the Lord. So is it worth that? When it boils right down to it, it's just stuff. And somebody dying and going to hell is not worth some stuff. And so sometimes in this life, for Christ's sake and His honor, we have to take wrong. We would be defrauded. That word defraud there, it means deprive of right. Deprive of right is what that means. And he goes on in verse number 7, you not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded. You could suffer yourselves to be deprived of your rights. But in verse number 8, he said, nay, ye do wrong and defraud, and that your brethren. And so if we sue one another, we do not take care of it in the church. We're actually defrauding our brethren. We're not doing right by them. So we ought to take care of things in the church. That's what he's talking about. Now look over in Ephesians chapter number 4. Ephesians chapter number 4. And we're going to try to, and maybe that makes you have some questions in your mind, but let's look over here before we, let's look what the Bible says in Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse number 31 and verse number 32. And we're talking about in the church, the brethren. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 31. The Bible said, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. And so this is talking about in God's family. This is talking about in the church. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. And so this is the law of Christ concerning us, that we ought to forgive one another and we ought to put away these evil things spoken of in verse number 31. Now, we look to the Bible first. This is what the Bible says. Now let's look at this little paragraph, what it says about lawsuits between believers. And we'll say a little bit about this. Lawsuits between believers. We believe that Christians are prohibited from bringing civil lawsuits against other Christians or the church to resolve personal disputes. Now, let me point out what this little word, civil lawsuits. We believe that Christians are prohibited from bringing civil lawsuits. Civil is, there's two courts. There's civil court and there's criminal court. Those are two totally different things. Civil court has to do with a property line. Civil court has to do with, let's say that somebody's car gets damaged in the parking lot. No crime has been committed except for property being damaged. Maybe somebody would take somebody to court over something like that. Civil court would be a business dispute. Nobody hit somebody. Nobody attacked somebody. We're not talking about aggravated assault. We're talking about maybe somebody said, you know, we went into business together and it was supposed to be 60-40 and they got more than, we're talking about something like that. That is a civil lawsuit. A civil lawsuit, what if you went to church with your doctor? You went to church with your doctor and your doctor prescribed something and you took a wrong medication and maybe it got made you sick, or maybe there was a billing dispute. Something like that, that's civil court. Criminal court is robbery, assault, abuse, things like that. So we're talking about civil things, not criminal things. I would hate for anybody to think that we would conspire together to cover up criminal actions just so it didn't look bad on us. Let me put it like this. In the church, if somebody molests a child, we're not going to deal with that in the church. You're going to jail. And the rest of us are going to clap as you go out the door. That's criminal. So there's a difference between civil and criminal. If somebody scuffs your car in the parking lot and you have a dispute over that, we can settle that. If there's something criminal going on, if somebody is abusing, and sadly it happens, if somebody's abusing somebody in their family, the church is not going to cover it up for you. The Lord doesn't call us to cover up. We're not talking about covering up. We're talking about settling things. Settling civil disputes. So I don't want there to be any miscommunication about that. We would never be right to cover up something illegal just to keep things quiet. And sadly, that's been done down through the years, I'm sure. And the Roman Catholic Church had a lot of problems a few years ago over covering up sexual abuse from their priests on their parishioners, and they tried to cover it up, and it finally came out. That's criminal, and that's not something we would just try to smooth over or keep quiet or anything like that. Civil is what we're talking about here is involving other Christians in the church, and I believe that would extend to Christians in other churches. If we had somebody in this church and they had a problem in another church, they really ought to try to settle that. If it takes getting the two pastors or some people together from the different churches, then we ought to try to settle that. And so that's first sentence. Second sentence, he said, we believe the church possesses all the resources necessary to resolve personal disputes between members. So All the things that would come up, we believe the church has the resources to solve the problem. And that's what Paul was saying to the church at Corinth in chapter 6 and verse number 5. He said, I speak to your shame. Is it so that there's not a wise man among you? No, not one that shall be able to judge between his brethren. Surely we could find somebody that could settle something in the church. So we believe the church has the resources to settle any problems that might come up. Then it goes on and it says this. We do believe, however, that a Christian may seek compensation for injuries from another Christian's insurance company as long as the claim is pursued without malice or slander. And that's something that we've run into before. For example, let's say somebody falls and gets hurt at church. It is not wrong to get insurance involved to help pay for that. That is why we have insurance at the church. We're already paying for that anyway for accidents. And that's why all churches, I think I'd be right in saying that, all churches have insurance. And so if somebody gets hurt, if something happens, but as long as that is not pursued with malice, I'd hate for somebody to have something and, you know, somebody came to my house one time and they tripped and they laughed and they said, I hope you got good homeowners. They was kidding me. But we do have insurance and that's what it's there for. And if we need to use it, that's what it's there for. So that's just common sense. And so that's some things about lawsuits between believers and what goes on as far as that's concerned. Now, we're going to look at giving and missions. And the reason we're going to take it in that order is that that's how it is in the church covenant. So, if we go on to the letter U, and it's talking about giving, the church covenant says this in the second paragraph. It says, and doctrines. Then it says, to contribute cheerfully and regularly to the support of the ministry, the expenses of the church, the relief of the poor, and the spread of the gospel through all nations. So that has to deal with giving. And we talked about giving tonight. Brother James gave the treasurer's report and handed one out for everybody. And so the church does have expenses every month. And if God's people do not give, those expenses will not be met. And so we believe that we are obligated to help bear those expenses. Let's see, if we look under the letter U, look what he says. He says, we believe that every Christian as a steward of that portion of God's wealth entrusted to him is obligated to support his local church financially. And so, look what he says. We believe that every Christian as a steward of the portion of God's wealth entrusted to him, God has blessed you financially, is obligated to support his local church financially. And so that's what it says in our church government. The church is not on a grant. Somebody told me, we was talking about something the other day, and they said, oh, you can get a grant for this, and you get a grant for that. You know, you can apply to the government. You can apply to corporations. They'll help the Boy Scouts build tree houses. I don't know, whatever. But there's all kinds of grants out there. But we are not on a grant from anybody. If we don't give, then nobody else is going to give. Coca-Cola is not going to send us a check to be nice. The government is not going to support us because they think we're doing a good thing. And that's one of the beautiful things about what the way the Lord set up the church. We are independent. We support what we do. And we support what we do by giving. And so if we don't give to the church and its mission, nobody else will. Well, how do we give? Look what it says. It goes on down. He says, we believe that God has established the tithe as a basis for giving, but that every Christian should also give other offerings sacrificially and cheerfully to the support of the church, the relief of those in need, and the spread of the gospel. And so the second sentence in this talks about tithes and offerings. And we find that principle in the Bible. Now, I've run into this several times. Some people don't believe in the tithe. Well, if you don't believe in the tithe, that's fine. It doesn't bother me a bit. But I believe the tithe is kindergarten. The tithe is A, B, C, D, E, F, G. The tithe is entry-level giving. So if you don't believe in tithing, you evidently believe in giving a whole lot more than that. Because tithing is how we teach our children to give. Where did you learn about giving? If you grew up in church, you probably learned in Sunday school. And I remember learning in Sunday school. Tithe means tenth. And I remember a Sunday school teacher saying, so, if you get a dollar this week, 10% of that is a dime. Your tithe would be, that's children's stuff. To really learn what the Bible says about giving is tithes and offerings. And so we believe in both. Basically, it works like this. The tithe keeps these lights on. Pays that insurance I was talking about. If somebody falls, if church burnt down, you know, we hope and pray nothing like that would ever happen. If a storm came along and blew the big windows out of the front of the church, you know, something like that could happen. There's all kinds of things. So tithe takes care of all of that stuff. And we're blessed. We even give part of our tithe to mission. It's what we do. And offerings enables us to give a whole lot more to that, to missions. And so tithes and offerings is God's financial plan for the church. That's how the work gets done. And it says sacrificially and cheerfully to the support of the church. And you know, I really wouldn't argue long with anybody that wanted to argue about giving. All that tells me is, as far as spiritual maturity is concerned, they're just not very far along yet. Because anybody that has experienced how God blesses you back, you know you can't outgive God. And if somebody's real tight or uptight about giving, they've just not give much. And they've not experienced how God just gives it right back. And you just can't outgive the Lord. And so it's a very basic principle in the Bible. Tithes and offerings. Okay, he goes on down and he says this. And these tithes and offerings, and we'll get into this a little bit, but the relief of those in need, the spread of the gospel. He said, we believe that a Christian relinquishes all rights to direct the use of the tithe or offering once the gift has been made. And so, let me say a little bit about that. We believe that a Christian relinquishes all rights to direct the use of the tithe or offering once the gift has been made. And so what that is saying is, I have no right to tithe and then go to Brother James and say, now, Brother James, I put in my tithe check this week, and I'd really like to see the church do this with it. See, I have no right to do that. Once we give our tithe to the church, it's the church's, and it's up to the church to decide what to do with what is given. And it's not up to me, it's not up to you. Maybe somebody has a, maybe you have a, and I've run into this before, maybe somebody sells a house, maybe somebody inherits some money, and they have a sum, a lump sum, and they want to tithe out of that. Well, you should. We should give out of all of our increase, but whether it's your regular tithe or whether you have a rather large tithe, once you give it, you don't direct where it goes. We relinquish the right to do that, and I'll show you that in the Bible in just a moment. It's not mine, it's the Lord's. Now, if I wanted to give a special gift, let me put this out there. If I wanted to give a special gift to Brother Bill and Sister Sharon, or Brother Kyle, or Brother Tim, or one of our preachers out of the church, that would be all right if I gave something to Sister Rebecca and said, you know, I'd like to give this to Brother Bill and Sister Sharon. That would be okay to do that because their support goes through us. So other churches are sending their support, and we pass it along to them. But if I want to give a special gift to a missionary that is not involved in our church, say they're a missionary with BIMI, I need to send it to BIMI and let them take care of the gift. I don't need to give it to Sister Rebecca and say, I want you to send this here, or I want you to send that here. There's what's in our church, and then there's what's out of our church. Don't give a gift to the church and say, I'd really like to see that go to Samaritan's Purse. If you want it to go to Samaritan's Purse, send it to Samaritan's Purse. Don't give it to the church and expect the church to. So it's just a little something unique in our church. A lot of churches do not have missionaries that are sent out of their church, so they wouldn't run into that. But we have some out of our church. We have some, many not out of our church. So I hope maybe that'll help a little bit. And so if we're taking care of their finances and stuff, that's one thing. But if we're not, we need to send it through their board. And so he says, we believe that a Christian relinquishes all right to direct the use of the tithe or offering once the gift has been made. And so let's look at some verses. Genesis chapter 14 and verse number 20. And some of these verses, or all of these verses, are in the bottom of this paragraph here. So Genesis chapter 14. This is the first mention of the word tithe in the Bible. And a lot of people's argument against the tithe is they say that's under the law. And we're in the church age and we're not under the law. Well, tithing was before the law. Genesis chapter 14, verse number 20. Abram comes back from delivering Lot, and he meets Melchizedek. It said in that Genesis 14 and 20, "And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thine hand, and he gave him tithes of all." So there were tithes given before the law. So somebody that says that's under the law, it's not under the law, it's before the law. Leviticus chapter 27 and verse number 30 says this. It says, "The tithe is the Lord's." So the tithe is not mine, the tithe is the Lord's. I've run into this down through the years. I've had people that go to other churches, they get dissatisfied, they don't like what's going on, and I've had people come to me and they say, "I want to give you my tithe." I'm not taking anybody's tithe. I don't want your tithe. If you don't like what your church is doing, go to another church where you can tithe. Don't give it to me. I don't want messed up in anybody else's problems that they've got. If they want me to give it to the church, I'll give it to the church. But I don't take tithes. Preachers ought not to take tithes. The tithe is the Lord's. Leviticus chapter 27 and verse number 30. Here, Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 and 10. Somebody called me one time and they said, "Should I tithe on my income tax return? Should I tithe on, I sold my lawnmower and I got $200 out of it. Should I tithe off of that? I done some work for my neighbor and he gave me $50. I had a yard sale and I made, should I tithe off of that? What should you tithe off of?" Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 and 10, the Bible says, "Honor the Lord with thy substance." And so whatever you receive, that's your substance. We're to honor the Lord with that. "And with the first fruits of all thine increase, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. Honor the Lord with thy substance, and with the first fruits of all thine increase." And so anytime you increase, that's where you tithe. Out of all thine increase, if you have a yard sale, well, there's probably two ways of looking at it. You know, you sold something good, you give it away, but you increase, so. We'll not be real technical about it. If you're real technical about it, well, you probably won't anyway. But when you increase, that's when you tithe. So here's my question. Should you tithe? Did you increase? Yes. That answers that question. Acts chapter 4. Let's go over there. We're not going to look through all of these, but I just wanted to pick out some of them. In Acts chapter number 4, the church at Jerusalem, the Bible said in Acts chapter 4 and verse number 34, "Neither was there any among them that lacked, for as many as were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the prices of the things that were sold and laid them down at the apostles' feet, and distribution was made unto every man according as he had need. And Joseph, who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas, which is being interpreted, the son of consolation, a Levite, and of the country of Cyprus, having land, sold it and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet." What did they do with their offering? They brought it, they laid it at the apostles' feet. And the apostles made distribution. The church made distribution. But when they came and they laid it at the apostles' feet, they relinquished their right to it. And so that's why we say, once you give, it's not yours to dictate where it goes and how it goes and how it's spent. It's up to the church. It's not up to me, and it's not up to the deacons. It's up to the church. And I think we need reminding from time to time that the church and the deacons, we don't run the church. We really want all the help and all the input we can. We sort of, if we run the church, it's by default because nobody will say anything. You know, we just get used to come in, and so somebody has to step up and keep it going along, but I don't want anybody in the church to think, yeah, they just run it. If you've got an idea, if you think something needs doing, we want to hear what you've got to say. And if you're for it, we'd like to hear I'll second that, or I'll make that motion. See, what goes on, it's up to all of us. We're all responsible. We're all in this together. It's, if you're giving, you're giving. I want to see what I give go to good. And so we're all stewards together and responsible together. Everything ought to be above board. Now, and that's why we pass out, here's this and here's that, and this is what was spent and what we bought and what we paid for. And so we're not trying to do anything that somebody don't know about. Then he goes on and he talks about missions. And missions is talked about in the church covenant. To the support of the ministry, the expenses of the church, the relief of the poor, and the spread of the gospel through all nations. And so he gives 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and chapter number 9. That concerns missions. But let's go back and we'll read this paragraph about missions and what it says about missions. This is under the letter S, and we'll conclude with this tonight. He said, "We believe that God has given the church the great commission to proclaim the gospel to all nations, so that there might be a great multitude from every nation, tribe, ethnic group, and language group who believe on the Lord Jesus Christ. As ambassadors of Christ, we must use all available means to go to foreign nations and not wait for them to come to us." So I believe we could say we believe in that. We believe in going. We believe in going by sending. We believe in giving by supporting. I mean, if you don't know that we're involved in missions, you don't know what's going on. And so we're trying all we can. And there's a lot of avenues to get the gospel out. We send missionaries. We have radio ministry. We have a college ministry. Get a door open into the public schools and clubs and literature and Bibles. And man, there's a lot of ways to get the gospel out. And so we're involved in missions, and I'm not going to go a great deal into that, but it talks about the church in the church covenant. It talks about the relief of the poor. We support the children's home. We have special offerings. If somebody has a medical need or somebody's house burns down or something like that, we're interested in the relief of the poor. But we're not to be unwise in our giving as well. There are people out there, they wouldn't care if the church bankrupted itself every week. You wouldn't believe how many calls I get. People wanting stuff all the time. There are people, they get by in life just by scamming and scheming, and it's during the wintertime, it's probably worse. But they'll call my house, and I've had some recently. Other preachers deal with the same thing. People calling all the time. And I don't believe God's called us just to throw it away. It's amazing to me how people can get somewhere, but they can't get home. They all have the same story. And we're up here from Georgia, and what are you doing up here? And I've got court tomorrow, and I had a call a couple of weeks ago from a nice motel over here in town. And because the number showed up on my phone. And they were wanting money. They was going to court the next day. And always, they've all got a long, sad story. And I've been burnt so many times, I'm sort of hard about some things, but I tell you, we want it to go where God wants it to go. And I don't want to give nobody no drug money, alcohol money, run down the road money. So we're to be good stewards and not to be unwise. And we need to be careful in our giving. But we are giving. And I tell people all the time, I say, yeah, we help people. But I'm not going to meet you in town and give you $100 just because. So we... Not that I even could, but missions, giving, lawsuits between believers, and we're going to close with that. Next week, we're sort of changing gears. We're going to get into this third paragraph about our families, and I really hope the Lord will speak to our hearts about this, because we could probably all improve. We also engage to maintain family and secret devotions to religiously educate our children, so we care about our families.